She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our show today was made possible due to the generous support of the Chapman Automotive Group, who has been recognized for outstanding community and environmental efforts. They are all that, and we thank them for their support. We're doing a commercial-free show today because we've got lots of content to pack in. So let's get rolling and let's talk about big green events. Our first guest will be sharing some truly amazing efforts on behalf of the NFL. I am sure many of our listeners have no clue about the Herculean efforts they go to make Super Bowls green. Super Bowl 49 will probably be the greenest of them all, but we'll find out from our guest. And for the second half of our show, I'll be interviewing April Trigg, who is the founder of Eventology. Her company is dedicated to greening the world one party at a time, and she's going to be a lot of fun. So now I'm breathless, Jack, because we had the hair of our chinny chin chin at the connection level. Just so everybody knows, I was calling the hotel and it was going to thin air, and I'm like, okay, we can make this happen, and we did. So thanks for being here. We are interviewing Jack Rowe. He's the National Football League's director of their environmental program, Massive, you're going to find out. And I also read about Jack. He's an award-winning journalist who has received recognition by the Associated Press, UPI, and the Society of Professional Journalists. And he's not just impacting the NFL. He's worked with the United Nations and the International Olympic Committee as a featured speaker on environmental project development. Jack, thanks for joining us on what has to be two of the busiest weeks of your life, Super Bowl weeks.
Oh, yeah, it sure is. No, it's great to be here with you this morning, and I'm so glad that you're, taking the time to look into this, because sustainability and sports don't always sound like they go together. And when you think of something as huge as Super Bowl that uses as many resources as it does, when you think about the environmental impact and the environmental projects around it, sometimes there's a disconnect, and folks need to sit back and say, wait a minute, I don't get it. How do these two things go together? So I'm glad you're taking the time, and I know our time is limited this morning, so we'll try and do our best to give folks some insight into how all this stuff works.
We're going to action pack in what I call a lot of content, and I have the list, and I think when you said, a lot of my guests say, let's have some fun, because learning, when it's fun, you remember it. So what about, there are many initiatives from solid waste management, e-waste recycling, and I don't want to gloss over any of them, prepared food recovery, the materials donation, you're getting kids involved, you work with the community, you don't just come in and leave, your climate change initiative. And I'm going to do the David Letterman thing. Instead of top 10, what are Jack Groh's top three fun things you get to work on to lessen the environmental impact? And if we get time for all of them, great. But let's go with your top three.
Well, my top one, I think every year, is the urban forestry projects that we do. It's got to be the most fun, especially when we do them in neighborhood parks and have lots of kids turn out, as well as their parents, and get the whole families out there. Sometimes we'll get 100 or more people to come out to a park and do the tree plantings. So that's my number one.
I cannot believe that's your number one, and it makes me really happy. Our house burned in the Wallow Fire, and it was 560,000 acres, so 567,000 acres. So replanting trees, top of Mrs. Green's list. So that's great, Jack.
Yeah, and it depends. I think you mentioned something just a moment ago about working with the community, and that's what we do. Rather than come in with a plan of exactly what we want to do and what's
right.
needed, we actually start planning these environmental initiatives a year or a year and a half in advance of Super Bowl, because it takes some time to sit down with folks in the host community and determine, the number one thing for us to determine is what's our environmental impact in the community.
Right.
And that's a little easier than it sounds. And we know how much food and water and electricity and energy are going to be consumed. And we have those numbers. So that's a fairly easy part. But the second half of our mission, which is to leave some kind of a positive legacy in the community, there's where we really need to sit down and make some plans and figure out what is it we'd like to do, but what is it that this local community really needs? And we have yet to be in a city that says, oh, no, we don't need more trees.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Never, ever, ever.
Yeah.
And you're right. You don't come in. You're partners. That's what I was so impressed with, your partners. You don't come in with your big plan. Excuse me. You make it happen. So that's number one, and it gets kids involved and it gets schools involved. I mean, it really is a community, some of the, you know, the governmental agencies. So what's number two on the Jack Rowe favorite greenie list?
Well, I don't know if it's number two or if it's number 1-1, maybe, but my other top favorite thing is the Super Kids Super Sharing project that we do each year. My wife, Susan, actually works for the NFL, too, and she manages that particular project as part of the environmental program. And in Arizona this year, for instance, we have over 100 schools that are participating in it. About half of them are donor schools. About half of them are recipient schools. And the way it works is we send out all the materials. We send out posters, and we send out signs, and we send out instructions. And then the schools decide which ones want to sign up. And after they come back from Christmas vacation, kids bring in used books, used sports equipment, school supplies. You know, when I say used sports equipment, I mean stuff that's in good shape and very
usable. Right, year, because kids grow. It's like with equipment. They grow, and next year all the moms have to be out buying new sports equipment for the kids.
Oh, my gosh, my kids would go through two pairs of cleats in one season.
Yes.
Sometimes when they had a growth spurt. But
right.
All that stuff gets collected at the schools, and then we have one big event, and this year it's the Thursday just before Pro Bowl, so it's a week and a half before Super Bowl, and all those schools and all those kids come together at one place, and we sort everything, we inventory everything, and it takes us a couple hours. And, of course, we have some great play activities for the kids, too. The Arizona Cardinals are participating, and the Salvation Army provides the facility. And we have a Verizon in there, which is – Verizon is interesting. They're the first NFL sponsor to actively get involved in the greening of Super Bowl. And one of the many things they're doing is they collect cell phones as part of Super Kids, and then all those cell phones get reconditioned and distributed to domestic violence shelters. This is a program that Verizon has had in the works for years, but it's only been 2 years now since we partnered with them on that. So once all that stuff is collected, inventoried, sorted, counted, and it can be 20, 30, 40, 50,000 items come in the morning, that it's not unusual to have 40 or 50,000, then as soon as the afternoon hits, we bring in the recipient schools, and they come in and they get a little sheet with a number on it that tells them proportionally, based on their enrollment, how many books they can take, how many pieces of sports equipment, school supply items, and then they walk out of it. Well, they don't usually walk out; they drive out of there with a truckload of stuff to bring back to distribute to their own schools. So that is really, boy, that event is just more fun. We have the Arizona Cardinals participate. The cheerleaders are there. You know, it's just a lot of fun, a lot of kids, a lot of excitement.
And it sounds like it. And the thing that I love about it, what good modeling for both the kids that are donating and the kids that are receiving it. I mean, I know very, very clearly there's the have-not schools and the have schools, because the have schools, the moms and dads can buy stuff if the school district runs out of money. And in schools, that's not an option. You're helping, in my opinion, to narrow what I call the great divide, which is good for everybody. When kids are learning, it's really good for everybody. Okay.
Well, you know, Gina, we use that as a highlight, too, for local talent, because we always have a local musical group perform at it as well, too. And it's always a school group. It'll be a school chorus, a school choir,
awesome,
a school band. We always have one of the local schools. And what they do is they do a little number. They perform a number. And we always ask them to do something inspiring, and they always do. They perform a number. Then we have a speaking program, which is mercifully short. Because, you know, the last thing kids want to hear when there's 500 kids in an auditorium, they'd love to sit and hear a speech, right? And then we close the program with a musical performance. But I always tell the speakers before they get up there, I say, look, we're not here to give stump speeches. We're not here to brag about what we're doing. The only reason any of us should get up in front of this crowd is to express our thanks and our gratitude for these kids for taking the time to reach out and help other kids in their own community. I said, that's the message they need to hear, and the rest of the stuff is just, you know, it's just hot air.
And it's what they'll remember. I mean, if you keep it short and keep it fun, they'll remember it. So it's a story for another show, and we have way too much content to cover, but I'd love to know, how do you pick? There's lots of talented kids, lots of talented bands, and you pick one. And I'll bet you the competition is fierce, and every kid wants to be the one. That's the tough part.
You know, actually, there's a quick answer for that, because my wife, Susan, handles all the logistics for that. And what she usually does is looks around for a school that doesn't have the financial resources to donate, but wants to be part of the program. And she'll go and she'll say, well, look, you guys are a recipient school, and you're not really able to donate much. You know, you go to some schools where every single kid is on free lunch, and you just know that there is absolutely no money or resources available in that particular community. And she'll say, this is your way where you can contribute to the event and give to other kids. So she's wonderful about picking that perfect group to perform that it really means something to them.
So next up, what we should have had was Susan Groh, the other side of Jack, and what she's doing to make a difference. Maybe that'll be Super Bowl 50. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yes. Oh, she's delightful. Oh, yeah, I love Jack.
And it just it sounds great to hear about all the wonderful things she's doing. And she gets to travel with you, I would assume, to some of these things then, meaningful role.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot more now the kids are grown up. You know,
right,
we had to really balance the travel a lot when the kids were little, but now that they're all grown up and they say, see you later, see you,
yep.
See you, bye.
Mom and Dad are having fun. It's good, making a difference for the planet. So let's talk about, so that's like 1A and 1B, which are absolutely fabulous. And then there's some of the, I don't know, this is exciting to me. There's so much stuff. You decorate, there's building materials,
there's
office supplies. When I read what you do with it, it knocked my green socks off. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was absolutely the next thing I was going to mention.
You know,
it's hard to put them in 1, 2, 3 order because, all three projects are exciting, but we call it our material recovery and donation program. Sometimes we just call it our repurposing program, but you're right. There are trailer truckloads of stuff left over from Super Bowl. We use 5 miles of fabric just as fence panels. We have every airport, hotel, downtown street, bus stations, train stations. Every place you can think of is decorated with banners and flags, and there's a lot of vinyl decorative pieces that go up all over the host city. And you mentioned some other stuff. We have a lot of office supplies that we have to bring in
while we're working here.
Well, nobody wants to pack all those, you know, partial office supplies
and take
up,
them to the
bring
next
them back
football
to their
game.
Office.
Right.
They already have all that stuff back in their office, wherever it is. So we've got a couple of programs. So we collect all that decor and fabric and vinyl, and we find in most cases, we find local organizations that are set up, that have the resources available to repurpose it. Maybe they remanufacture it and sell it. I think you probably saw the piece about New Orleans. In New Orleans, last time we were there, there was a local design firm that got together with us. And what they did was they took some of the decor and they turned it into shower curtains, beanbag chairs, tote bags, beach bags, wallets, and then one designer down there who we just love to work with turned some of the fence material into outfits like tank tops and pants, and then she turned some of it into evening gowns, which was just a hoot.
You've got to be flipping kidding me. It was like
made out of leftover fence.
Hashtag OMG. It's like
But she would do it as a one of a kind for a client, they're amazing, you know, and people wear them to balls and parties and stuff like this. And of course, it's New Orleans, you know, you can get away with a lot.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, you know.
I am going to absolutely Google and see if I can find her and maybe get her on the show. I mean, that's amazing. There are some outstanding actresses that are wearing recycled material, like Colin Firth's wife.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, that would really be nice.
Her name is Tracy Clausen, and the company is called Repurposing NOLA, and N-O-L-A, which is New Orleans, Louisiana. So it's Repurposing NOLA. so it's easy to find. And occasionally she puts up pictures of some of the specific dresses designed, but I'm sure if you dropped her a quick note, she'd send you some just amazing pictures.
Drop your name all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's how you get Jack Rowe and Jane Goodall. It's like,
you know,
if
you can connect the dots and get, you know, some celebrity someplace to wear a gown or a dress made out of that, oh boy, I tell you, you will have boosted the profile of repurposing by about 8 miles.
And maybe I would get a ticket to Super Bowl next year.
Hey, listen, anything is possible.
Someone said, are you going to ask him for a ticket? I said, no, I'm just going to make a joke about it because I know how much the tickets are going for. It's like you don't get a radio show and a pass to the Super Bowl. And we're not going to even talk about the game last night. It's like, what a game. It will go down in the annals of history.
Now, which one of the two games?
It was the Green Bay and Seahawks.
Seattle. Oh, my God. That was what a nail biter. Huh? I'm telling you.
My God. I couldn't sleep. I mean, literally, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was having heart palpitations. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you were for. It was great that I'm a big Pete Rose fan. But still, I love Green Bay. Yeah. And it was the guy that missed that pass. I forget his name. I'm sorry. He'll be so sad. Like for the rest of his life, for the onside kick. Let's not talk about it.
That was a game that if you left your seat to go to the bathroom, you have no idea what you missed.
You should have held it.
Yes.
You should have held it. Oh my gosh.
I was sitting with a whole bunch of folks here at the NFL Super Bowl headquarters, and during, I don't think in the fourth quarter anybody left their chair. You know, people were afraid they were going to miss something.
Oh my gosh.
And then, of course, the New England game. My wife and I live up in New England, so we're a bit partial toward New England. So we watched that game afterwards, and it was just tremendous. And you asked about teams, and I think this is a good segue into that, Jane. You asked me in your email about teams. I did want to mention two quick things about that. Number one, the New York Giants, who you said are a team that you really like.
The Jersey girl loves it, and I know they get rock star. Go ahead.
I'm going to give you one more reason to like them. They were the first team ever to hook up with the NFL's environmental projects at Super Bowl. Several years ago when they were playing, it was the game, the first game they played against the Patriots. And they got in touch with us, excuse me, and they said, what have you got going? And we said, well, we got food recovery and recycling programs, and we've got material donation, and we've got, we've got all these different programs to repurpose materials and to eliminate waste. And they said, hey, we're right there with you. Tell us what we need to do to be part of all these programs. And then, of course, they went on to win Super Bowl. And I don't know if you believe in karma, but
I certainly do.
That's why they won.
Let's just say that they won because they went green.
Some people might argue that they won because they scored more points. But at the college football playoff, and you mentioned that I worked for that national championship. I consulted with them this year as well too, and it was Ohio State and Oregon. And we had a tree planting competition the week before the game, which is a riot because we brought in five different college teams, and the teams competed to see which team could plant 10 trees the fastest and the most accurate. And of course, the winner got a trophy and got some trees donated to their campus and all this. Well, all of the five colleges, four of them were local Texas colleges. Ohio State flew in a bunch of people just to plant the trees, just for because they heard about this competition. They wanted to be part of it. And these were folks who weren't even going to the game. They just flew in from Ohio to plant the trees and then fly back home because they just wanted to be part of this whole, event and extravaganza. And when they got all done, I said, oh, dear. I said, we know who's going to win the game. And I told them the story about the New York Giants. And they said, you mean Ohio State's going to win the game? I said, if karma is in operation this week, then it sort of looks like that's what's going to happen.
Oh, my God. It's great. But, it's a segue to kind of like the heavy part of the conversation. And for 7 years, I have never put anyone on the spot. But you get the challenges. So, we're laughing and having a good time. One of the biggest challenges in terms of real climate change and measuring is the impact of travel. So those people flew in.
Yeah, I'm thinking,
they flew in, I fly. I mean, I'm not taking a bus anywhere. Excuse me. So what do you do in terms of the challenges? We at the U of A, just very quickly, had a Greens a homecoming this past year. It took them 2 years to plan it and measure. And the you know, there's just the systemic impact, like every fraternity party and every homecoming party and every club that had a party. And I said, what was your biggest challenge and the where did you make the least impact? And they said CO2 emissions. And I like I looked at them, I'm Mrs. Green. And I was like, what do you mean? They said travel. Because from LA, from Phoenix, and you have it from all around the world. So what do you think, not, you know, what are we going to do? Do you have any ideas as Jack Rowe, environmental leader? How can we ever impact that part? Because people want to go to the game. I want to go to the game.
Well, yeah, and you raise a really good point because we are able to address so many things effectively. I can tell you that for the college football playoff, for example, we had a sponsor in TerraPass, and you're probably familiar with TerraPass,
yes.
The company out in the company that does offsets. For anybody that's not familiar, they do renewable energy certificates and offsets, and they're a good company, and they sponsored both the renewable energy certificates for the stadium to mitigate the environmental impact of the energy used at the stadium, but they also provided travel emission offsets equivalent to the entire team for Ohio State and the entire team for Oregon. Now, when I say the entire team, most people say, oh, well, that's what, about 25 or 30 guys in uniform. No. This was the team, the trainers, the administrators, the coaching staff, and it came to about 300 people per team. So we had so they as part of their sponsorship offset the travel emissions for 600 people who absolutely had to be there.
Right,
They didn't really have a choice. They, you know, we wouldn't have had a game if they hadn't showed up. But we're working with them too right now on another project. And you're right, it's a sticky one, but we're working on a project for next year to do voluntary fan offsets. And here's the key to me. I mean, it's one thing to set up a voluntary program where fans can contribute $1.50 or $2, which can go into offsets to cover their travel emissions. That's easy to figure that out.
Right.
The hard part is, how do you motivate people to really want to be part of that program and to feel that it's valuable and important for them? You know, you and I and everybody else that works in this field knows that telling people it's a good thing to do, that's just not enough motivation to get everybody on board.
No, it doesn't always translate into action at all.
No, exactly. So what we're looking at now, and we've got one of our major merchandise sponsors on board now too, and if all goes well, what we're looking at is offering folks a coupon for this is just one of the ideas that's on the table now, but it's the one I like the best, where we offer fans a coupon. They go to our website for the event to look up, you know, to get the schedules, find out when the events are, you know, what other event tickets are available. People flock to those sites prior to Super Bowl and college football and all that kind of stuff. So they get in there and they look at this, and there'll also be a link there that says you can offset your travel emissions and double your money. So in other words, somebody pays, like, let's say it's $2 to offset your travel emissions. Well, automatically a coupon will pop up that's worth $4 off merchandise at one of the...
That's awesome. That will motivate people. That really will.
Exactly.
That absolutely will.
You put up your $2 for the environment, and you get a coupon worth $4. And since everybody wants to bring home souvenirs from the game, those will get used. Now, what's the benefit for the merchandise company on this? Well, for the merchandise company, even if we drive an extra, 1% of people to the merchandise stores, then the merchandise company, it's a win for them. It's certainly a win for the fan who's going to be shopping there anyway. And, obviously the win for the environment is obvious. But there's another part to it, too. Out of, let's say, that $2, about 50 cents on that $2 will come back into a fund that we can use to fund additional sustainability projects. So if we're a little bit short on tree planting money 1 year, we can take tap into that, and we can use that to plant additional trees, or if we need additional recycling bins in a stadium, or, you know, whatever we need. But it would be available only for development of additional sustainability projects. So we're jazzed about this.
I call it the green. It sounds like the green trifecta. I love that. I mean, it really is a win-win-win. It makes me very excited. And before, go ahead.
It's interesting though. You're kind of ahead of your time bringing this up because we're, you know, it's in the plans right now, in the planning stage. But it's been in the planning stage for years, and now we're finally getting to the point where it's close to becoming a reality because there's most of the projects we've worked on, they sound simple once you describe them now, but my gosh, in some cases, there were a couple of years of planning and research that went into them. When we started in 1993, there wasn't one stadium in the United States of America that had a solid waste recycling program. And in 1993, the NFL decided, we're going to try it at Super Bowl in the Georgia Dome. The obstacles we faced trying to get it up and running when there were no personnel, no procedures, no infrastructure, and no equipment. And it was like that for several years until gradually the fact that recycling was going on at Super Bowl, I think, started to spur other people to say, maybe we should recycle at our stadium, because if Super Bowl is doing it, maybe there's something to it.
And maybe it's cool, and maybe it matters. I get so excited about it because, I mean, I'm Mrs. Green, and I don't know if you heard in the beginning, because I really was excited and rushed, and we had a little bit of a glitch with connecting, but we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if people start thinking about the management of solid waste at a big event like the Super Bowl, you have to go down the rabbit hole of thinking and all of the moving parts that it involves. Yeah. It's not just an easy, let's do that next year. It's a huge, big effort. And before we run out of time, what do you do with the leftovers? I love that part, because you do have extra prepared food items from the Super Bowl, and you don't just throw it away if it can be recovered. Talk about that. It's another great thing that I'm really proud that you do.
Well, every state that's hosted Super Bowl so far, and I think we're almost to the point where it's every state in the union, has what's called a Good Samaritan law that protects people from liability for food that they donate for shelters and other places, as long as they follow certain guidelines.
Right.
The guidelines are the food has to be prepared in the kitchens, but it can't leave the kitchens. It can't go to a public area.
Right.
So let's say you have a buffet table and you're making lasagna, and over the course of the night you put out 8 pans of lasagna in the buffet, but you actually cook 12. There's 4 more huge pans of lasagna that never left the kitchen and were never, there was never any chance of them being contaminated. Those can be recovered. And in fact, we're in Arizona this year for Super Bowl, of course, in about 2 weeks here. But last time we were here in Arizona, we worked with a local organization called Waste Not, and they were able to recover 90,000 pounds of food from the game, from the parties, from the big events, from the award ceremonies, from all the different activities that go around Super Bowl week. And that's a record. I mean, we've never beaten that number. That was 45 tons of food, and all of it was fed over the course of a day or two, went to soup kitchen shelters and other places. And what it really did was it offset almost $150,000 worth of costs for these food programs in the Phoenix area. So there was a real financial windfall for local organizations that feed hungry people by being able to get all this food, not only at no cost, but to have it already prepared and ready to serve and ready to go. So it's,
That stuff would go in the landfills. I mean, that's the thing. It's such a multiplier effect, because you have it and then it goes in the landfills. And we have about 2 minutes left. And the last question I want to ask is, for fans coming, What do you want them to hear? We have a pretty good listening base in Arizona. We'll be tweeting this all over the country. We'll be praying for good karma where we get a retweet from anyone at the Green NFL. It's like, oh my gosh, let's get retweeted. This is what I live for now. But to really spread the message, it's like, do you know what's going on? So what would you say to fans to be conscious of when they're coming up? I know tons of people who are going to be at the Super Bowl.
I'm not sure if you're going to like this message, Sheena, but here it is.
Lay it on me.
When I have volunteers working for me on projects and stuff like that too, especially if it's game related, I say, remember, people don't come to this event to be educated. They come here to be entertained. And I said, anything we can do that's green, that enhances their experience and their fun here at the event, is absolutely wonderful. I said, but job number one is, and I would say to anybody that comes out to here this year, is please just have the best time of your life.
That's really great.
And enjoy it.
Have fun and just have a little bit of consciousness with you. Jack Groh, thank you for everything you do, and thanks to NFL. And make it a great green Super Bowl. It was a delight to interview you.
You too. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Wow, everybody. Can we just take a deep breath and exhale and kind of absorb everything that Jack Groh had to say from the NFL sustainability program? I cannot believe what they're going to be doing for this Super Bowl and what less of a carbon footprint they're making. And, oh, by the way, take a deep breath, because the next guest that we have on, it's going to be equally as exciting, equally as impactful, long range. Please join me in welcoming April Trigg. I can't even go on and on enough about this woman. She is the queen of sustainable events. She is the founder and president of Eventology, and it's a very interesting path. In 2002, she left her very stressful, very high-profile post as vice president of West Coast operations for the New York-based entertainment consulting firm Platinum Rye Entertainment to become an ecotainer, an ecopreneur, and trust me when I say from the bottom of my very green heart, she really is eco-fabulous, and I love alliteration. So April, thank you for some of those great glowing eco. Thank you for taking the time, for being here, and we're going to talk about what's up. I will not be cliche this whole program, I promise, but I had to say, tell us what's up with your eco-fabulous self.
Thanks for having me. What a great way to start 2015. So I was in entertainment for a very long time. I actually started in the business when I was 15 in Miami. And
as
I
a
really
gorgeous
loved,
model. I mean, let's every you should Google
behind
April
the scenes.
No, but you are a model. When I saw you at the Captain Planet Foundation, I was like, oh my God, she is stunning. So there, let's just go on.
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind. Well, I have always been more of a behind the scenes person, and obviously being in the event business, that's definitely what it's about. But we have concentrated from the beginning on ensuring that everything we are putting out in front of our guests and the attendees that come to the various events we do, that they are really getting the message and the mission from the beginning, from when they walk in the doors till when they leave. And it's been a great pleasure to kind of make this transition from entertainment to events.
And just not events, but really and truly green events. So you went into a sustainable and very conscious path and have I just mean this, a very impressive list of clients and accomplishment. What made you decide to go in the sustainability, you know, take that path of which you could have had many to from which to choose?
Sure. It honestly was, I say, kind of one of the happiest accidents of my life. Well, it's really true. I mean, I left the entertainment business to really kind of do something. I was just at a crossroads. I had an opportunity to stay in it. I was then kind of put in the path of being able to get married. My husband, we dated for 11 years. He was in Atlanta. He gave me the opportunity to start my own company. And so I did take a little bit of time to figure out what I wanted to do. And events is really a very parallel industry to entertainment. Contract-based, people-based, I'm a very service-oriented person. I love kind of the concierge experience, and it's how we treat our clients. So I knew I wanted to be a very specialized company, but literally within the first 6 months of starting Eventology, I did a show house completely pro bono, and it benefited a nonprofit and healthcare, and Whole Foods Market was actually involved. They had their chef's panel at the time doing cooking demos for 2 weeks in the house. It was all about diabetes, so they really did healthy cooking demos, and I was really, really just moved by what a lot of the chefs participating were about, but particularly one, this gentleman named Scott Crawford, who is still a dear friend. And he had a catering company called 101 Concepts at the time, and everything he did in terms of producing the menus and the way that they actually created the presentation was all about local sourcing. And this is, you know, over 10 years ago when the whole farm-to-table concept existed. It just was
wasn't making the news like it is, right? Wasn't high profile. Exactly.
So we ended up doing about 20 different events within this show house, and I really got the opportunity to explore how to create these menus with him for the various events in just really, I thought, unique but really purposeful ways. And it just was that light, and that light that, okay, this is the path, we have to do it this way. And he actually introduced me to my first environmental client, which is the South Face Energy Institute. They're based in Atlanta. They're a local kind of regional educator in earthcraft housing, green building, obviously very closely associated with the U.S. Green Building Council and LEED certification. And I just did my 10th visionary dinner we're actually working on my 11th visionary dinner right now. That's going to be in October. And it was just a really amazing opportunity how fast the world of eco-events became what our entire business philosophy was about. I've been able to learn over the past 10 years from so many different local vendors, farmers. I've gone to recycling plants in Chicago. I've, you know, toured different facilities. I've met so many different vendors as the whole, you know, went from kind of biodegradable to now compostable products. Just seeing all of the different opportunities out there, it's just been such a fantastic way, I think, to approach the business, because it's not only about producing fantastic events to
right.
me, it's really about education, not only ours, but then being able to educate vendors when we go into large facilities and just continuing that learning process, which I think then becomes also just a lifestyle where your entire our business revolves around just being conscious, but being able to work with our clients. And for those who aren't necessarily environmentally based, we bring that consciousness to their events as well. So it's just kind of a well-rounded cycle that's worked really well for us in business, but it's also a great lifestyle that's kind of come out of it for myself.
Impact for the planet is so high on my list of the things that you've done. And, you know, it's funny, our paths being similar in some ways. I had the same kind of being guided on my path, you know, activate the matrix kind of thing. And mine was the rainforest and going down there and seeing what's happening and connecting it to what's happening on the planet and then starting realizing what's in my food. And it's a slippery slope once your consciousness begins. You like start getting
right.
excited about every little thing. But let's talk about specifically how I love the path, but let's go in between some of the details. For example, you started with local sourcing of food and healthy food and had a great partner. And then you talked about, you know, compostable, you know, food, what do I say, paper plates and all of that stuff. So compostable mm-hmm. items for that. But your events are beautiful. And that to me matters, because I think sometimes people think, oh, if I go green, is my event going to look, you know, like Birkenstocky? I'm just going to be honest,
right.
and tree huggerish, because that's really a myth I'm trying to explode for mainstream people. But what other kinds of things do you look at? I think you look at the flowers and the containers. And can you just talk a little bit about the details of when you're planning big events like you do in New York City and Atlanta and Chicago? Mm-hmm. What are the kinds of things besides the food that you and your team are really focusing on to minimize the carbon footprint?
Well, it's really interesting, because obviously the whole farm to table eco events, I think people have a connotation, a vision in their head where it's all, you know, everybody's sitting in a field and they're
we're eating, we're all eating kale.
Yes, we're all eating kale, and everything is, you know, khaki-colored burlap. And there is that end of it where I think if you want that look and the very farm-to-table with the rustic, like we've actually used a lot of farm tables. I mean, it's a beautiful kind of concept. I've actually done that in the Hamptons with one of my clients who we actually pull flowers from her own gardens, and, you know, everything on Long Island is so easy to source, especially in the summer, because
right.
there are so many bountiful farms out there. And so we've done a very elegant take on that farm-to-table look, and then we've done really high-tech events where it's much more about the city. I mean, actually, one of my favorite events I've done in the past 10 years has been with USGBC. We've worked with them since 2005, and we were at Chase Field in Phoenix, and it was probably one
yes!
of the most magical experiences, and I'm not just saying that because you're in Phoenix, but we, you know, that facility specifically was really very interested in pushing their own boundaries of what they had accomplished, and this was in 2008. We actually used a lot of LED lighted tables, so that was when really just kind of pushing the whole LED concept was really helpful. We didn't have a lot of table linens. We reduced, you know, our footprint on that, but everything was reusable in there. We actually told the story of how, you know, clearly baseball and a baseball field, the whole hot dog concept, which I think for an environmental crowd can be a little bit concerning, alarming, but we actually went to a local sausage
when I eat mine
factory.
I hide mine when I eat them. It's like, oh yes. My gosh, everybody, it's a guilty pleasure. It's like Mrs. Green should not be eating a hot dog, but they're so darn good.
Well, we actually did a really healthy take on it. We really showed this whole entire cycle that began with, you know, the local pig farmers and then this local sausage factory that made 88, it's called Shiner Sausage. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's this little hole-in-the-wall factory that this gal actually ran. They make 88 types of sausage every single day. Everybody working there has been there. It's been a family business that was actually passed down from one family to another. It was just such a really wonderful story. I went and made sausage, which was quite interesting because I don't consider myself a vegetarian, but I'm awfully close.
But you don't consider yourself a sausage maker either.
I am definitely not a pork eater, but I just really love their story. And then what was fantastic is all of the, you know, local fruits and vegetables, all that food waste from the prep actually went back to one of the local pig farmers came and picked it all up and then fed their, you know, entire farm of animals for the next week with that. So really being able to show that, you know, it really is a life cycle with food as well was just such a fun educational aspect of that event. And you know, Chase Field is such a cool venue because it has the retractable roof, and we did a whole time-lapse with our great video people, and just to be able to show the entire waste cycle and life cycle, everything that happened in that event was just really cool. And it was very, again, tech-heavy because we had Al Gore, we had Sheryl Crow, Rick Ferrazzi, obviously CEO of USGBC, had this great international delegates that work with USGBC around the world. It was a really tech-heavy show, so you didn't think at all, oh, this is a, you know, super farm-to-table event,
right,
because it was really
right.
presented in a completely different way. And we really work with our clients to ensure that we're always on track budget-wise. We always aim to be under budget. And I think that's the other misconception we have been fighting against, you know, over the past decade is if we're doing something really fun and fabulous and it's eco and we have, you know, locally, organically sourced, you know, food and we're working with all these great local vendors, that it actually saves us costs because we're not trucking everything in. We never go into a city where we are flying and shipping and doing all of that stuff. It goes against our principle. We really try to minimize our carbon footprint wherever we can. We're a lean and mean machine over here because we go into the local communities and really source, you know, local labor, our decor, our catering. We really go into the farms and say, hey, what are your crops like? What are you planning to grow this season? What can we really capitalize on? And what story can we tell? That's the most fun part of my job is going into a new city, doing a new event, and figuring out what is the story we're going to tell to then really I think, evoke our clients' mission and messaging in the best light. And that's so fun to do that every day.
And it's one thing that I put on my list. It's such a misconception that doing it green is more expensive. I was, oh, I can't do that. It's always more expensive. And I just, I really debated in prepping for the show about how to position this, because I do have a lot of local listeners in addition to people around the country, but we have a big event here with an organization that I absolutely love called Boys and Girls Club. I mean, who hasn't heard of Boys and Girls Club?
Of course.
There are, it's called The Party. Okay. So it's wine tasting. And when I go, I call it doing the Mrs. Green breathing thing, because there's so much waste, and there are styrofoam plates. There's, you know, about 150 food vendors, and there are these disposable plastic wine glasses. So in my fantasy world, if an April Trigg came in, what would you start encouraging them to do to change that? You know what I mean? It's massive waste, and they are locally owned restaurants. So where do you start to help them evolve? Because they asked me to help them 3 years ago, and I didn't have a good answer. I'll be honest.
Well,
like, I don't know without it being really expensive.
Well, it's really interesting, though, because we actually do a really large nonprofit event here with local restaurants, and we actually had that exact same problem. It raised so much money for a fantastic, you know, national organization, and we grant out locally, but the challenge when you are getting so many people involved that are already doing such a great thing, I think there is a concern to really ask for something else. But what we found was we actually went to kind of a recyclable and then compostable products
right.
within the last several years of this event. And we do have 1,200 people. We have 55 restaurants. You know, basically we're looking at quantities of 30,000 plates, forks.
Right,
We actually did a lot more glassware, which helped to some degree. But then, you know, obviously ensuring that any of the cupware, the glassware, which were mostly plastic at that point, we're able to then go to recycled plastic, and we've again then taken the next step to compostables. And it's a challenge because it is yet another ask, and
yes.
when it comes down to raising money that go back to organizations and feeding people and really focusing on that messaging, I think a lot of the other points with the environmental initiatives and that responsibility on the waste part become the things that go by the wayside.
Right.
And so because of, you know, our involvement and some of the leadership involved with the event, who also feel really strongly about making sure that our waste quotient is as little as possible, but also just being, you know, I think respectful of, it's great to do something good, but you have to really take it from A to Z. You can't, focusing on just the one part is great
right.
for a certain time, but ultimately we're all responsible for our planet, and it really goes back to then the whole food system. So if you look at it from that perspective, which is really what we went back to the restaurants and said, like, I know we're raising money, you know, to fight childhood hunger, but we also have to make sure that we're not putting waste back out into the world that then becomes another issue that we're putting out there for our children. So I think once you phrase it like that and you position it like that, and then we've gone to vendors that have provided, you know, the actual plateware and the glassware and the flatware, who are actually making more products that are, you know, biodegradable, recyclable, compostable. They actually want to get that messaging out there too. So we've been really fortunate that sometimes you just got to throw out, I think, the overall vision of it.
Right, the big idea of why it makes such
an
impact. Yes, yes.
Right. But it also comes down to business. Every business out there wants to be seen as conscious and responsible and respectful of their surroundings. I think more than ever, our business return does come back to the public consumer, right? So if you have consumers really seeking out organic food products, locally sourced products, just ethically responsible, and then obviously with all of the disposable ware,
right.
that industry is changing so much because the consumer is saying, I don't want something that's in styrofoam. That's leaking into my system. You're actually polluting my body by serving a styrofoam product. Different line products even. I mean, I think that the consumer is really driving the conversation, and therefore that buying power really makes the difference. And companies are more interested in meeting those needs because it's being asked for. And that is definitely a trend that has evolved more in the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I bet you have seen major trends in for as long as you've been doing this, positive trending.
Well, I'm sure, because it's a lot easier for me to, push might be the wrong word, but encourage a client to, really look at a more locally sourced menu or use compostable products instead of even plastic. I mean, I think that conversation is a lot easier now because it's also not seen as more expensive because it's just what the request is. So again, that buying dollar becomes more influential. And it's really made, I think, our job a little bit easier to explain for sure and do a lot easier and more widely, because I think people also understand the conversation now as opposed to 10 years when we were trying to do it.
I agree. And I think that people end up seeing that. And I mean, I think the public is asking for it. I totally agree with you. And the overall, it's just a feel good happening. When I go to an event, especially if it's some type of event for children's health, and I see styrofoam and plastic water bottles, I end up figuring out a very diplomatic, encouraging, and supportive way to talk to the event planner and say, I love your event, I love this cause, I'm supportive, but it's counterintuitive to have things that are known carcinogens to put your food on your plate. You know what I mean? So that are bad for the planet, that can leach into your water. And I feel like it's a great opportunity. And usually it is very well received. Hopefully that's because of my tact in the way that I approach it. And not say, I can't believe you got styrofoam and glass bottles at this event, but really the opportunity to educate. So other than, I think the misconception that green is more expensive, what are some of the other, I'd like to talk a little bit about, what are some of the realistic obstacles you face in trying to make your event as sustainable and as low carbon footprint as possible? Are there any big ones that stand out that would help our listeners to be educated about as well?
Sure. Well, it's so funny, and obviously with the Super Bowl coming up and your conversation with Jack, I think when you go into different cities, and again, this is, either when you're traveling, obviously every city is a little bit different with their recycling practices. I mean, in certain cities, you can't even, you're not even offered a plastic bag at checkout, thankfully.
Right.
Hopefully every city will become like that. San Francisco is clearly leading the way in terms of their fines, their restrictions on even how you, as an individual in your home, dispose of all of your waste. You have to be more conscious and you have to do it a certain way or you get fined. And I think that hopefully all of our cities will evolve to that, just because it will keep everyone in check, because it's not necessarily an ingrained behavior still for so many people. I mean,
agreed.
We put out our regular trash cans in our recycling bins every week, as, most people in our community do, but that's not necessarily the way in every community. We were just in New Orleans, actually, for Greenville this year, which was a fantastic opportunity. It's such a fun city. But it was interesting in our education, again, within working in a new city, as to what our challenges were going to be. And one of the challenges in New Orleans, which is somewhat shocking, is that they don't recycle glass.
Oh, my goodness.
And when I heard that, I was really astounded, considering all we think of. One of the things we think of, besides the wonderful music and culture in New Orleans, is also clearly a lot of bars and restaurants, and that culture, clearly a lot of glass. And I do think a lot of the restaurants and bars have adapted. They are more into aluminum, recyclable plastic.
Right.
I think that's great, but there still is an element of glass that's really unavoidable. And so we were able to, we had our event at the Superdome, which was fantastic, and they definitely worked with us on the local farm systems. That was fantastic to really, food is also another thing that is so well known in New Orleans, and we were really able to create a menu that evoked the New Orleans flair and food culture while
right.
also ensuring that we were promoting some of their local farms, which there are obviously really great ones. And, you know, it was just an interesting obstacle that we faced was how do we recycle this glass, and we ended up recycling about 762 pounds or something like that of glass from the event with kind of a third-party glass recycler, which our client used for their convention as well. You know, with that event specifically, we are under more strict guidelines than any of our other clients, which is something that really is fun for us, telling that story. We really get to tell that story.
Because of the USGBC?
Yes, exactly.
That's what people have to know. It's the United States Green Building Council. I use these acronyms like, it's like, so it's a big,
right.
It's raising the bar for building in our country higher and higher and higher. So it's an amazing organization. So go ahead. But
well,
the Superdome.
And they're really, oh. Yeah, well, and they're expanding internationally even more. I think their presence is becoming known all around the world, which is really exciting. But for us to be able to go into different cities, which they've given us the opportunity to do for the last 10 years, and really get to work with so many amazing vendors and farmers, go into these large facilities. And a lot of times it's really the education shift. You know, I think the Superdome is doing some really innovative things, especially with the outside, their LED lighting. If you've ever seen the Superdome at night, it's really beautiful. They light it up, and it's really great, and that's definitely one of their initiatives. Hopefully, we inspired them with the food services to continue working with their local farmers. We've had a lot of success around the country with that Leave Behind in the different venues, is really connecting, you know, the catering services, which honestly becomes one of the biggest waste quotients is the food and beverage and all the packaging and all that. We've done some really cool and innovative things to really push these facilities and the folks that work within them to think outside the box and connect with their local community perhaps in a different way than they have before. So that's always fun when someone comes up to you right before the event and talks about, oh my gosh, we made this great relationship with this farmer.
Right.
We're going to use them from here on out.
That feels
yeah, that
really
experience
good.
In Philadelphia last year was so fun, you know. And being able to feel like they're part of that messaging and that connection, I think anytime you can inspire someone to do something a little bit differently and it works and they see the success, and then they can take that messaging and help their business model and show, you know, their clients, their customers, their people that are coming in every week to go to the games, that they can still give them the level of expected service,
right,
but in a
right.
way that's even more connected and more exciting.
It's got to make
you
feel
when,
so great.
Happens.
Yes, yes, you're supporting
yeah,
locally
definitely.
Owned businesses, and I will definitely put it in my show notes to our team for things like Twitter, that there's a really important message here for what you're doing. And I'm telling you, I do love some of these lines that I come out with, and my kids cringe, but you had me from hello when I met you at the Captain Planet Foundation donor event, because your energy and the enthusiasm with which you approach these things was contagious. And I really honestly couldn't wait to have you on the show. When I came back with Kelly, I said, this woman is doing amazing things on a really big scale, which matters too. It's great to do the local parties and local events, which I know you do, but a bigger pebble in the pond from where I sit is definitely needed. You know what I mean? It's like USGBC, important. I don't know if we'll have time, but can you talk a little bit about the amazing innovations event for Cradle to Cradle in New York City? Wasn't that last November? I mean, very recently.
Yes, yes. It was actually the second one. We helped them create their innovation celebration 2 years ago in New York. The Institute, which is the Cradle to Cradle Product Innovation Institute, is actually based in San Francisco, but they wanted to really expand their audience. They had a really core group of supporters in New York and also in Europe, so it was a great kind of halfway point between San Francisco and their, you know, their manufacturers that have gone after certifications for their different products. They really have such a great thing going, and we're actually looking at expanding a little bit about upon that, this year they did a product symposium last year in addition to the Innovation Celebration, and that was really fantastic. I mean, it's a fundraising event. It's, I think, an awards aspect of it, I think, is really important because it really brings their manufacturers together to really share their stories and experiences. And it's always great to work with clients that you've worked with over the years. I actually connected with them originally with one of the folks on their team, all from Atlanta. And what I will say is Atlanta is such a thriving environmental community. And it's really funny how small the world is when you have these shared passions.
Visions.
And it's a very small world when you look at it.
We did a show with Cradle to Cradle, and I mean, it's amazing to me, and I'm a big fan of Aveda, but we did an hour show, and to see what they're doing in terms of product approval process and everything, and I'm getting the 30-second, we've got to wrap this up, and I'm just like, it seemed like it was 5 minutes. It's like, what are you doing giving me this sign? So anyway, everybody, April Trigg, Eventology. Thank you. Next week, Ari Nessel from the Pollination Project. Every single week he gives away, every day, $1,000. April, thank you. You can find her at eventology.com. Make it a great green week. Thank you.